Start. Welcome back.
Thank you. If I'm here one more day, you're going to know exactly how many court suits I have. May it please the court. My name is Donna Coltharp. I represent Selena Martinez in the case before you this morning. The question in this case is whether Ms. Martinez voluntarily consented to a search that required her twice to take her clothes off and squat on the floor of a small holding cell. Because this case is about the difference between consent and mere acquiescence, it's a difficult one. It would be easier if the law said, if somebody says okay and shrugs, that means consent. That would be we'd have a much easier case today because that's exactly what Ms. Martinez eventually said. But that's not what the law says, and it doesn't for a reason. The law recognizes both the law of this court and the law of the Supreme Court that mere acquiescence, that shrugging and saying okay, may not indicate voluntary consent. It may, in fact, indicate that the suspect just gave up.
Which way does it cut the fact that she first declined or was hesitant?
It cuts in favor of finding that it wasn't voluntary. I understand the court's question to mean that it's possible that indicates she understood she had the right to refuse. But if you're in a small holding cell with one woman and you say no at least twice and probably more, and the question keeps coming back, and then you put your clothes back on, which I think reasonably she believed at the point she put her clothes back on she was going to be permitted to leave. She wasn't.
Other than the persistence of the officer asking her again, was there something different about the requests, some intonation, something you deemed coercive, or that she argues transformed it to, you're asking me one more time, to, I've got to acquiesce in this? What about the comments? What shifted it?
It's always a totality. I think where it shifted in this case was going back to the holding cell. In Mendenhall, the suspect was also asked to take her clothes off during a pat-down search. But she was asked to do that at the same time she was asked to consent to the pat-down. So she was told, can we do a pat-down? She said, yes. Okay, that's going to mean you're going to have to take your clothes off. And the consent continued. In this case, Ms. Martinez was told that she was going to get a pat-down. She knew what a pat-down was. She'd had one before. So she consented to it. But she was then taken back to what was basically a holding cell. The door was closed behind her. She was asked repeatedly. And it was clear, I think, at the point that, and I really think the point where she was permitted to put her clothes back on is very critical, because there's a big psychological shift there. Up till that point, there had been a series of questions. Now, I think that those were coercive questions, and I think that this agent intended to do exactly what happened. But at the point that Ms. Martinez was permitted to put her clothes on, the psychological pressure really did shift. Because
let me ask you this. We have a world of automobile stop cases that emphasize the length of the stop, how long they are kept. Is there any authority in the concept of being retained in a cell holding type office, whatever this was, and repeatedly ask, is there a parallel to the coerciveness of how long and how many repetitions? And what are the cases that have said that?
The only one I'm aware of is a case from this court out of Florida back in 1963, which is cited in my opening brief. It's called PCAR or PACAR. And in that case, the agents wanted into a room where the defendant was, and they knocked, and he said no. They waited another 10 minutes and then tried again and were able to get in, and this court said that they had basically outweighed the defendant, and it was an improper entry. I think the time always has to be taken into account. I think the longer the time is, the more coercive the situation likely looked. But I also think as you're considering the time, you should also consider the level of intrusiveness in deciding whether the consent was voluntary. You know, a lot of us would voluntarily consent to have our purses searched, and some of us might voluntarily consent to a pat-down. But I think it's a very extraordinary person who would voluntarily consent to squatting so that someone could see her tampon string. And I think that although it only took 10 minutes, An explanation for that might be that Ms. Martinez is very small, she's very young, she's plainly susceptible to the will of other people. She was carrying drugs for her boyfriend, and she never ratted him out. He walked free. And so I think when you balance the time of this encounter against the level of intrusiveness, what Ms. Martinez was asked to do, and factors that indicate that she's very vulnerable, I think it all weighs in favor of a finding that this wasn't voluntary.
Now, refresh my memory. At the suppression hearing, who testified?
The agents Luna and Agent Sedano testified. Ms. Martinez submitted an affidavit in conjunction with her motion to suppress. It appears from the record that the affidavit was not considered. The district court said in her order that Ms. Martinez had put on no evidence to contradict.
So is my recollection correct that she was not present, so there's no deference to give to the court for...
Other than her affidavit, the court did not consider her live testimony, so credibility findings simply would mean that she found Agent Sedano credible, not credible vis-a-vis Ms. Martinez. Yes, that's exactly right. I wanted to take just a minute because I know this is a hard case, and I know that lines in this area are hard to draw. I wanted to point out a decision also cited in my brief that's a lot like this case, where this court found that consent was voluntary. And that's Judge Smith, your opinion in Galbraith. In that case, a woman, just like Ms. Martinez, was stopped at an airport and asked if, based on suspicion that she was carrying drugs, and asked that if she would consent to a search. And she said that she would. It was a pat-down. She was taken into a public restroom at the airport where people could enter as this was going on. And she was patted down over her clothes. And in the course of that, and she never said anything, she never put up any resistance. And in the course of that pat-down, the officer felt a bulge at her waist and said, "Is that part of your body?" And she said, "No, it's not." And the officer reached up under the dress and pulled out a bag that had drugs in it. But the case is a lot like ours. But it's different in really important ways. In the first place, Ms. Galbraith was in a public restroom. The public could see what officers were doing. And if Ms. Galbraith had a problem or felt coerced, she could appeal to the presence of the public in that restroom. Agent Sedano did more than reach up Ms. Martinez's dress. She asked her to take her clothes off. Even though Ms. Martinez had said she didn't want to, she asked her to remove her tampon, even though Ms. Martinez had said she didn't want to. Unlike Galbraith, Martinez did refuse. She refused at least twice under the court's order, and I think Agent Sedano's testimony, she kept saying no every time I would ask, indicates that it was more than twice. And finally, and again I come back to this fact, the agent let Ms. Martinez put her clothes back on. And I think given the nature of the search up to that point, the level of intrusiveness, Ms. Martinez had every right to believe that she was going to be able to leave. And when Agent Sedano again said, "You know, would you mind taking off your pants?" I think she knew she wasn't going to leave until she had done that.
So it's on a continuum here. You know, we don't necessarily like line drawing, but, you know, either temporally, as Judge Wiener asked, I mean, how long, how many times does the officer get to ask? I mean, it's a tough call to say, well, where along here? Did she ask one time too many? Was it not the number of times, but now it's, you know, take the clothes off?
Totality tests are really hard. They're hard to think about from the perspective of an advocate, and I know they're hard to think about from the perspective of the court.
Put that in the context of the totality of the circumstances. We don't look at just each one individually, do we?
Exactly. And I talked with my colleagues in the office about, you know, where do I say the line is? And the fact is, there is no bright line. And sometimes agents are going to step across that point in the continuum and behave inappropriately. You know, a long time ago, 130 years ago, the Supreme Court said in Boyd versus United States, egregious constitutional violations begin with moderate ones. And that may be where we are right now. I mean, I don't happen to think this is moderate, but it's certainly not the most egregious violation you can imagine. But if we don't decide this case, we don't decide that they crossed the line in this case, then I fear you're going to be seeing more cases where people are asked to take their clothes off and expose their genitalia to officers, because that's the way the law works.
What about the difference between probable cause and reasonable suspicion?
The government has conceded there was no probable cause. Were this the functional equivalent of a checkpoint, this court's precedent says that this would be appropriate under a reasonable suspicion standard. That was not litigated. United States versus Jackson, a case that my old boss, Mr. Campbell, argued years ago in this court, suggests that the government has to come in and prove that the checkpoint is the functional equivalent. We don't have a finding like that for this checkpoint, and the government hasn't argued that I know of that it was.
So is reasonable suspicion enough?
No, it has to be probable cause other than at the functional equivalent of a checkpoint.
What was the probable cause here?
The government's conceded no probable cause.
Okay, well, that's good.
Okay, right. So I think there was no probable cause. Everything that happened in this case, and a lot of it happened,
Why doesn't that end it?
Because you have to address whether she voluntarily consented. And she got off the bus consensually. And so I think the crucial question is, when she submitted to the search, was it voluntary? Let me just run over the five facts that I think are really key here, other than Ms. Martinez's stature and her youth. The five facts I would ask you to think about when you're thinking about that continuum are her knowledge of what a pat-down was. So when she consented to a pat-down, she had a clear expectation of what was going to happen. Her consent to being stripped didn't happen out in the open at the same time she consented to the pat-down. It happened after the agent had already been going through her clothes and she was in a confined cell. The fact that she said no, not once, but twice, and perhaps even more times. I want to stop there for just a minute because there's a little bit of, I think, difference about how many times she said no. The district court records that she said no to taking off her underwear and she said no to removing her tampon. So when I say at least two times, those are the two times that I mean. Again, Agent Sedano let her put her clothes back on before requiring her to take them off again. And finally, I think that the nature of the search has to be part of the totality inquiry, whether a reasonable person would submit to this kind of intrusion. And if there are no more questions, I'll reserve my time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, we'll hear from the government.
May it please the court and counsel, Mara Blatt for the United States as the appellee. As with all Fourth Amendment cases, the totality of the circumstances standard mandates a fact-intensive analysis. What is exceptional, I think, in this case is the lengths to which the defense has gone to with regard to certain factual assertions, particularly in its reply brief. And I feel compelled for that reason to first dispute several of those factual assertions because they are important and they do bear on the issue of consent in this case. And I apologize in advance to the court if my discussion here is a little bit blunt and maybe even graphic. In the reply brief, and there's a suggestion, the defense actually says that there was a request made by Sedano to inspect Martinez's genitalia and that her genitalia were exposed. That is not what is in the record. What is clear is that for perhaps a few moments, maybe a minute or two, she was naked from the waist down. There is no evidence that her genitalia was actually exposed to Sedano. Indeed, the testimony on cross, Sedano is asked, well, did you look underneath? And she answers, no, ma'am, I did not. Aside from the routine pat-down search, which she consented to, and that occurred while she was fully clothed, Sedano was never touched or threatened physically by Martinez in any way. There was no request from Sedano to inspect or to examine or for her to even examine the tampon, although that is the claim that's made in the reply brief. The only time Sedano might have touched the string is after the heroin-filled condom is handed to her by Martinez, who voluntarily removed it from her body. There was definitely no request from Sedano to allow Sedano to pull on the string itself. And there was no request from Sedano to Martinez to pull on the string until Martinez acknowledged that it wasn't the string of a tampon, which comes very much at the end of this series of events. What Sedano did ask Martinez was if she would remove the alleged tampon, and Martinez refused and would not accept a replacement feminine product. And once that happened, she didn't ask her again. She didn't ask her again to remove the tampon. Sedano also asked Martinez to take off in the sense of completely remove her underwear to ensure that there was nothing concealed in them. And bearing in mind that there's a bolo on both Martinez and Cantu as potential body carriers, this was not an unreasonable request. But in any event, Martinez refused to do that, and Sedano did not ask her again to completely remove her underwear. What happened here were momentary actions by Martinez. They are consent by action. She was twice asked to pull down her underwear and squat, which she did quickly and without protest. And before Sedano even had a chance on the first occasion to even explain to her what it is she wanted her to do. And when this occurred...
What does the record tell us in terms of how many times she either refused consent or showed some hesitancy about granting consent? I'm just asking you as an officer of the court to tell us what might be in the record in that respect.
There were two occasions when she absolutely affirmatively said she would not do something. The first was that she would not remove her tampon, and the second was that she would not entirely remove her underpants. With regard to pulling down her underpants and squatting, she does those actions very quickly. She says, okay, and does it. That's what the record reflects.
How long had she been in this room with the armed, uniformed guard before she did that?
I can't tell you precisely, but I can tell you this, that it is uncontradicted in the record that this entire chain, when she walks into the room, takes about 10 minutes. And we know from the record also that part of that 10 minutes was taken up with some preliminary questions. She removes her jacket, and Sedano, the agent, pats down the jacket. The agent then does the actual pat-down search, all of this very routine. The agent then asks her to take off her jeans. She does that. She frisks the jeans. And then comes the first request to allow her to see her underwear. She refuses. And then, before the underwear, she asks her if she will remove her tampon, and she refuses that, and she says, I don't want a replacement. I'm on my period. So seven things take place in that room before we actually even get to the point where the agent makes the request for her to pull down her pants and squat. And when that action first occurs, there is testimony, and Sedano, not Martinez, is standing with her back to the wall so that Martinez's access to the door of the room is completely unimpeded.
You mean it's unimpeded, but she's got an armed uniform border agent there?
Yes, but, and it's true that the agents, all of the agents in this case, you know, were armed, which is what agents are.
Yeah.
But she had been through this checkpoint before. She had gone through this procedure before.
Well, the implication of your statement was that she could have walked out because the guard wasn't standing between her and the door. And that doesn't make any sense at all.
Okay. Then let me explain what my implication was, that, or what I intended by that statement. The defense makes a great deal of the atmospherics of this case. you know, the armed guards, the closed room. And all I'm saying is that if she was allowed, she was freely allowed to be in this room, doesn't mean that she had the right to, you know, that she felt that she had the right to leave. But it's not like she's being pushed up against a wall or otherwise, you know, cornered by the agent. And I think that does somewhat take away from the implication that just because she was in this room, that that was somehow necessarily coercive. This is a body carrier.
What does the record say about the physical description of the room? One door, what's the dimension? Any windows, anything?
Yes, one door, one window, and that actually, Sedano testifies that Sedano was facing with her back to the window when the pull-down search occurred. And then there's a little small wall and a toilet on the other side of that. I think it's important to keep in context here that this is somebody who, for whom there is already a bolo, two bolos actually. There's a notation in her own records that she is a potential body smuggler. And then there's also the notation in Cantu, her boyfriend's record.
Are you suggesting that there's a different protocol for the officer's actions because of that, and the officer knew that, and that's why that was being followed, or that's just ancillary to this whole inquiry and in the mix of things?
I think it's something that's more in the mix, because there is at that point a heightened sense of issues of health and safety, both with regard to the certainly with regard to the carrier, the potential carrier.
Did the officer know at the time they pulled him over that there was a bolo out on her and the boyfriend?
The sequence of that events is that there had been this prior incident about 10 days before when Ms. Martinez was on a Beretta van, and she had been encountered by Agent Luna.
Right, that was the male who sort of recognized in it that she had been through before?
Yes.
All right, but it's the female who actually did the examination.
But she absolutely testifies that she knew there was a bolo, that she knew that she was a suspected body carrier. Yes, that is in the
record. But all she asked for was a pat down.
I'm sorry?
All the agent asked her for initially was a pat-down, not a strip search.
That's true, but we're in, and this is the difficult part of this case, is that as this situation is developing, there is more and more information coming to the agents that they're moving really through more and more information that tells them, yes, we really do have reason to believe that she is indeed carrying contraband.
So does this case turn on, ordinarily this may be a case that the officer went too far, but because it's infused by this bolo knowledge that's sort of the imprimatur of okay, you know, to do it. When you've got some extra knowledge about the propensity or tendency or likelihood of this person as a carrier, that, you know, that moves it one step along the continuum where the reasonable suspicion or whatever is enough. Is that what you're urging?
Well, I think first and foremost, we're urging that there was voluntary consent for this, and that the things that Ms. Martinez refused to do, she was not asked to do. And indeed, the record does support the notion that the agent was actually working within the parameters of the events, of the actions, which Ms. Martinez had refused to do. Okay, you won't take out your tampon, you won't give me your underwear, will you squat down? So I can see the string, which is all that the agent is looking for. And the second request, I think it's a very fair implication of the record that the second request comes because whatever the agent may have seen with the first pull down didn't register, or wasn't, you know, she saw something but she wasn't sure what she saw. And so when she said to her, hey, look, if I can see the string, I can know whether this is a tampon. Would you pull it? She's now fully dressed. Would you pull them down again. And she does, and then that's when the string is visualized as not being that of a tampon. While it's certainly true that these are unusual facts, on the other hand, they're not indicative, as the defense, at least in their reply brief, has appeared to argue, that these are that even the procedure that was done was overwhelmingly invasive. It wasn't. Clearly, it is unusual in the sense that she was naked from the waist down, but that was very momentary in relation to the entire course of events that occurred at the checkpoint. The other thing is that the district court did have in front of it at least some testimony from Ms. Martinez through an affidavit. That affidavit was created 4 months after the fact of the search.
But that's no basis for the usual deference that we give to a court that's conducting an examination of live witnesses in noting the demeanor and so forth.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying, is that the court did have the opportunity to look at her and also had the opportunity
to look at her?
I believe that she was present at the hearing because
she didn't testify.
She did not testify. Okay. No. Yeah. But that affidavit in and of itself is somewhat is internally inconsistent. She says on that day that she, April 8th, that she used heroin, that she was very high that day, but that somehow she still remembered the details of the search. And that directly contradicts Luna's testimony that he had seen her when she was highly, highly intoxicated and almost to the point of unconsciousness at a prior time, and he characterized her as coherent, able to understand what was going on, interactive, and that the only time her affect changes is when they're waiting in the checkpoint and he says to her, well, you know, have you ever transported drugs through the checkpoint? And she says, her demeanor immediately changes. She bites her lip, she looks down, she can't look at him. He then questions her again and then goes back around again and says to her, well, have you ever, you know, taken drugs through this checkpoint? And she recreates the same affect. Again, more information coming to the agents with regard to what was actually, with regard to increasing reasonable suspicion, thus allowing for the extension of the detention.
Let me ask you just to speculate a minute based on your experience. I understand this is not in the record because it didn't happen, but let me ask you to speculate as to what would have happened if she had continued consistently to refuse to do anything more once she had put her clothes back on. I mean, her vehicle had already left, is that right? Or
her van had already left, but that's standard practice at these.
Okay, well, I'm not arguing about whether that was standard practice or not. I'm just saying, given that the vehicle had left, what likely would have occurred at that point?
I think that if she had pulled down her pants again and
Let's say she hadn't. Let's just say that she had, once she had put her clothes back on, she had refused to consent to anything more. She had positively refused. No, I refuse. I'm not going to do that. What would the agents have done at that point?
I think the agents would have had to have let her go, because I don't think they had, you know, probable cause at that point.
Okay. I mean, that answers my question. Of course, she would have been there with no transportation, but...
Right. Yeah. But I think they would have had to have let her go.
So what you're saying is they don't hold them and get a warrant.
I don't know what the basis of the warrant would have been at that point, because they would need probable cause for the warrant. So yes, I think they would have let her go. I'd also like to talk a little bit about the defense's characterization of Ms. Martinez as somehow being completely vulnerable, sort of an innocent pushover, if you like. And it is certainly true, while her life may have come to a very sad pass on April 8th, the defense's attempt to characterize her that way is really not a realistic assessment of the record. She had been through the checkpoint at least one time before and certainly 10 days before. She had prior arrests and a conviction for drug possession. She had the bolo as a body carrier, which strongly implies that somebody out there knew that she was doing this and had done it on a prior occasion. Not that that speaks to her guilt, but just in terms of her own understanding of the world. She had previously consented to the pat-down searches, and of course, she was fairly well-educated and literate in English.
What was her education?
10th grade.
Mm-hmm.
With these facts, it's not unreasonable to conclude that her somewhat passive manner was, in fact, a strategy for trying to pass under the radar and not mere acquiescence. Finally, I would just add that under Kelly, this court has consistently held that it is possible for only one factor to hold the day for whether or not there was an ultimate conclusion on voluntariness. We have at least four of them, one that her custodial status was voluntary, that she cooperated with both Luna and Sedano, and that when she refused to cooperate, those wishes were respected, that Martinez might have known of her right to refuse, but in any event, that is not dispositive under case law, that she was sufficiently intelligent and educated to understand what was going on around her. Finally, we think that the record does support the conclusion that her consent was not coerced. For all these reasons, the government requests that you affirm her conviction.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Black. Back to you, Ms. Kothop.
What weight should we give to the fact that has been pointed out to us, and it's obvious from the briefs that she had been through this sort of encounter before?
I think that weighs in favor of a non-voluntariness finding. She'd been asked for a pat-down before. She knew what a pat-down was. There's no evidence in this record that she was submitted to a remove your clothing and squat search on that prior incident. So when she said, yeah, I'll do a pat-down, she had a very clear picture in her head of what that was, and it wasn't what happened. And I guess we'll just start there with her, also with her individual facts. I don't think prior drug arrests, which there's no record ended in a conviction, make her not vulnerable. She was 20 years old. She had two prior drug arrests. She did have a bolo out, and you know what that bolo said? It said, watch out for her because she carries drugs in her body for her boyfriend. She made money to get high on. The first time she went through that checkpoint, she was incredibly intoxicated on heroin. It's against the law to use heroin, and it's a very, very, very tragic fact to be an addict. But addiction does, in fact, make you a more vulnerable person. Youth, addiction, a bad past, they do, in fact, make you more vulnerable. They don't make her not culpable.
Pardon me for interrupting, but
all right.
Go back. You said about the bolo. What did it say?
The bolo said, watch out for her. If she's with Raul Cantu, she's going to be carrying drugs on her body or in her body for Mr. Cantu.
Well, there's a difference between on and in. Which did it say?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can...
I think it said she's a body carrier. I believe that's what it said. She's a body carrier. And I'm happy to submit a letter, but I believe it said she's a body carrier. I really want to talk about suspicion for a minute because I'm worried about that point. And here's why I'm worried. The question in this case is whether consent was voluntary. The government has conceded there was no probable cause. There's no record for probable cause. The government seems to be suggesting that there's some kind of continuum of suspicion between reasonable suspicion and probable cause that permits that kind of search. No court has identified such an intermediate position. Nor has any court ever said that the question whether a suspect did something voluntarily has to do with the level of suspicion the officers had. Did the officers think something was going on? Absolutely. That's not relevant to whether Ms. Martinez voluntarily consented to this search. It's relevant to whether they have probable cause. That's not an issue here. Everybody agrees they didn't have probable cause. And then I just want to close. I argued this case very aggressively. I don't think I was dishonest. Ms. Martinez was required to squat with her underwear down around her ankles on, and I'm going to be a little graphic, on a floor. Her genitalia were exposed. They may not have been full force exposed to Ms. Sedano, but they were exposed. And as to whether Ms. Sedano saw anything more than a string, and I do apologize, I'm going to be graphic. Ms. Sedano saw the string and saw what looked like a condom. There's really no way that Ms. Sedano could have seen that it looked like a condom without looking. It wasn't just a string hanging down. It was what the string was attached to. I absolutely agree with the government in this case that this is a hard case. I absolutely agree with that. I think this is where we draw the line. I think if we don't draw the line here, we're going to have another case. We're going to be asking where the line has to be drawn.
Ms. Blatt made the comment, as I wrote it down, I think I got it pretty close. She said that Ms. Martinez was not asked to do what she had already refused to do. Could you comment on your view of that?
She was asked to take her underwear down, and some point between her saying no and a few moments later, she ended up squatting with her underwear around her ankles. I'm trying to think it out loud. I think that may be accurate. I think that she was asked to pull her underwear down around her ankles. Somehow she ended up doing that, even though she had said no. She was asked to She was asked to squat so that Ms. Sedano could see the tampon string. Ms. Sedano didn't see it, and she was then asked to take her clothes off and squat again, even though she had refused to remove the tampon string. Ms. Sedano, on page 221 of the record, said, in response to defense counsel's questions, she did not want to do this. I think that's the clearest indication on the record of what Ms. Martinez wanted and why she did what she did. If there are no more questions.
Any other questions? All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to both counsel. Appreciate your briefing and your argument to the panel.